Hello, my name is Chip Lane. You are listening to Total EM. I've been told that I need to introduce myself a little bit more. So I am an emergency medicine PA. I practice out of Missouri. I've been doing emergency medicine both pre-hospitally and in the hospital over the last decade and as a PA for the last 7 years. And I developed the Total EM podcast series as a way to talk more about a variety of topics in emergency medicine, which is why Total EM stands for Tools of the Trade and Academic Learning in Emergency Medicine. In case you haven't listened to this before, or it's been a really long time and you forget what the Total EM actually stands for. Also, something else that has come up and something that I'm really happy is I got feedback specifically about how previous podcasts have helped different people. And I always like getting that feedback. But there was one in particular that I want to talk about a little bit more because he went through, and I'm not going to go through the entire thing that he sent me. I included it in the show notes, so make sure to check the blog side as well for the images and what we're going to talk about more in detail on that side. But he sent me this thing about how he works in this very small emergency department and how he learned a lot with the ortho podcast and that he wanted to do more like fracture, musculoskeletal type podcasts, which is why we're going to talk more about scaphoid fracture specifically today. And this is a great chance to remember that I'm always happy to get feedback and information so I can make the podcast better. And if you are interested at all in joining in on the podcast, kind of like how Mike Sharma has done or other people kind of guest post in, I would love that. I think it is very beneficial and it has really helped the podcast continue to grow. For that reason, that is why we're going to dive into the top five pearls for scaphoid fractures. Plus, I sprinkled in a little bonus about POCUS at the end. Scaphoid fractures are often missed, but they are important fractures due to the potential complications that come up with non-union, post-traumatic osteoarthritis, and the potential for avascular necrosis. It is also one of the leading causes of lawsuits. Although we shouldn't be worried and practice defensive medicine, we need to recognize that these injuries have real consequences, both for the patient and potentially for yourself down the road. One of the ways to help remember this and to think about this was to kind of break this up into five kind of key pearls to go over. And I base this a lot on an article that was published earlier this year in May by Berber et al. Titled Fractures of the Scaphoid. And it's meant to be this basic review, but it is high yield, has lots of information. It's one of the reasons why I like the BMJs, because they are able to condense information in a way that's meaningful and gives you a ton of information. Now let's get started. Number one, fractures that are not promptly diagnosed or treated can progress to non-union. Most non-unions will become symptomatic and require surgical management. If no such treatment occurs or that treatment is unsuccessful, it has a high risk of post-traumatic osteoarthritis, which can occur in up to 75% of patients. Another common concern is that avascular necrosis can develop, and it occurs when the proximal fragment is interrupted from the retrograde blood supply of the scaphoid, which is a branch of the radial artery that enters dorsally. Number two, there are three clinical exams that can help you detect scaphoid fractures, and they are checking for snuffbox tenderness, scaphoid tubercle tenderness, and a positive thumb longitudinal compression test. If you don't know what these are, that is fine, because we included pictures of each one of these exams directly from the BMJ in the show notes. So again, go to this podcast number 214, to be able to see the pictures and see how you perform each one of these. Anatomical snuffbox tenderness is the classic one to teach, and that's the one that I knew. But the scaphoid tubercle tenderness one I kind of heard about, but forgot until I was reading this. The positive thumb longitudinal compression test, that was one I didn't really know was actually helpful in detecting scaphoid fractures. So that one was kind of interesting to hear as well. The most sensitive clinical sign is snuffbox tenderness, but it carries a high false positive rate. However, if a patient does not have any of those three findings within 24 hours of injury, a scaphoid fracture is highly unlikely, and in one study, it is 100% sensitive. These signs will resolve quickly, though, and is no longer reliable 48 to 72 hours after the injury. So really, this is only meant for the initial presentation. Number three, if suspicious for a fracture, obtain wrist x-rays that include scaphoid views. We think a lot of times of the x-ray views as traditionally being like the posterior anterior or PA, the lateral, and oftentimes the oblique view where the wrist is pronated like 45 degrees. And while those may be your standard three-view x-ray series, they do carry a higher risk of missing certain pathology. The one that is additionally beneficial to get is what's called a Zeider view, and that's a PA view of the wrist, an ulnar deviation with the beam angulated at 20 degrees. This allows for a slightly different capture to get a better view of the scaphoid. Even then, as one study has shown, you can miss 16% of these cases still. So again, x-rays are not enough. If clinical suspicion remains high but the x-rays are negative, you should immobilize and refer for further imaging. We're also going to talk about, like I said, here in a few minutes about POCUS, but that's really something that is up for some debate still because the evidence is not terribly strong. Repeat x-rays are not effective and cross-sectional studies are required. Just keep in mind that while CT or computed tomography can be performed, MRI, magnetic resonance imaging, is the preferred imaging modality. So we should only use CT if MRI is contraindicated, because MRI has a higher sensitivity and specificity. The management is going to be based on the fracture type. If the fracture is non-displaced and is at the waist or the distal pole in most cases, a simple thumb spica splint should be used with casting for the next 6 to 8 weeks. If you don't know what a thumb spica splint is, again, go to the show notes because it is the main image that you'll see. Non-displaced or minimally displaced waist fractures may benefit from early surgical management, but that's based on a small cohort study primarily consisting of athletes. Displaced scaphoid waist fractures of greater than 1 to 2 millimeters are unstable and require fixation to avoid the non-union issues. Fractures of the proximal pole require surgery because the non-union rates are very high, even with cast immobilization. Again, if you're wanting to see some examples of some positive cases, this is a great place to go, podcast number 214, and checking out the images to be able to see that even more. But what you'll find is that these are very subtle fractures. They can be missed with the traditional views, which is all the more reason why a pronated oblique view and a Zeider view should be added in addition to a traditional PA or lateral view. Like I said, as a bit of a bonus, I did want to throw in some POCUS. Keep in mind, POCUS or point-of-care ultrasound to examine scaphoid fractures is very limited in the amount of evidence that we do have. And while we are going to cover this, I want you to be cautious about this because it is not perfect. Some of the earliest evidence, though, is from 20 years ago. 5 studies over the course of the next 5 years, so from 2000 to 2005, was discussed in a Best Bets blog, which I thought provided a pretty decent review as kind of a quick review of some of the earliest studies. But there's a more recent review that was published in 2018 by Kui and Kui in Skeletal Radiology. And then the images that we use for the ultrasound section is from the Chinese Journal of Traumatology by Jane et al. That was published in 2014. In that study, the Chinese Journal of Traumatology study, the accuracy of scaphoid fracture detection by ultrasound was 98% compared to 20% with x-rays. Now, you may be thinking to yourself, that seems awfully high for ultrasound and awfully low for x-rays. And while that kind of looks true at first glance, we have to look at the sensitivities and specificities. So with x-ray, it was 35.7% sensitive and 40% specific in that study. And keep in mind, based on what they're saying in the paper, they did do all 4 views. But ultrasound was 79.8% sensitive and 76.7% specific. They did some kind of statistics to help identify the accuracy of it. But keep in mind, those are pretty low sensitivities and specificities. So I wouldn't hang my hat on ultrasound alone. Now, with the right clinical context, if I'm seeing it pretty clearly, then okay. But if I'm not, I'm not going to totally rely on it and say whether or not it truly rules in or truly rules out. Maybe it's something I'll use if the x-rays are somewhat questionable and I have an exam that's consistent with it. I may throw in the ultrasound as an extra bonus. Even when we look at other studies like the Kui and Kui study, we see that the pooled sensitivity was 85.6% and the pooled specificity was 83.3%, but some smaller studies do report 100% sensitivity and or specificity. There are many factors as to why there is this broad range in numbers, but one of them is most likely because of the skill set of that person who has the ultrasound in their hands. So this is not your typical exam. Again, if you are pretty novice to ultrasound, especially when we're talking about orthopedic ultrasound, I wouldn't rely a lot on this. I would stick with your imaging and the splinting and the five tips that we discussed above. But if you want to learn about this, could be a great chance to learn a little bit more. I would probably use this first if I was learning this on the positive cases only, which is actually what I have been doing as I've been learning this over the years. Again, it is important to remember to be careful with these fractures and to have a low threshold to image and immobilize if there is clinical suspicion. Also, it is important to educate the patient on the importance of this to help ensure appropriate follow-up for further management, because sometimes you're going to have patients who don't really understand the severity of the fracture because they're not having a lot of immobility issues or maybe not a ton of pain or maybe they just don't get it. So it's important to educate our patients in these fractures and how these are particularly dangerous ones. Hopefully, this is a great little review for you. Like I said, make sure to check out podcast 214 to get some more information. Also, if you are interested in learning more about point-of-care ultrasound, check out Practical POCUS. You can go to practicalpocus.com to learn more about it. We also have a link once again in the show notes, so you can check that out more. There are online classes, in-person classes. There are great options coming down the pipeline for you to learn. Plus, it can be bundled with a butterfly. So if you're trying to get your butterfly IQ with a CME bundle, this is a great opportunity to get that. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.